Hi, I'm Rick.
I'm Dan.
I'm George.
I'm Jake.
And we are Queer Magnolias,
the podcast.
In each episode,
we're going to talk about everything from growing up queer in the South
to the issues affecting our community today,
with a little bit of fabulous sprinkled in along the way.
Join us for an all-you-can-eat buffet of queer joy,
mixed in with the occasional bitch fest,
but always served
with the spiciest tea.
Hey, y'all. Welcome back.
Hi.
Hi.
This week is going to be a spooktacular Halloween special.
Oh, my God. Not the spooktacular. Yeah. In.
I couldn't wait to say it. And I guess specifically, we're going to get into the gayest monsters you can think of.
Queerest monsters.
Queerest. Excuse me. You're right.
Why Let's not?
Endora, honey. Endora, of course. Endora
icon, honey. Yes.
So I'm sure we're all just ready to get out there. So who's first?
Are we chomping at the bit?
I mean, yeah, I'm looking at Rick. That's Endora on his shirt.
Everybody looks at me, though, because I always show up with a list.
Oh, that's
yeah. And not to be undone by previous episodes, I have a list.
Oh, my God. I'll be back in a little while, y'all.
Class, we're going to have a book report.
All right, everybody lay on your little mats now. Rick's going to talk.
Little Ricky Clifton has a special report he's prepared. This is the miseducation.
Of Lauryn Hill, yes.
Exactly, honey.
Well, I don't know if my character qualifies necessarily as a monster, but I'm going to go for it anyway, because it is definitely one of the queerest characters, I think, in monster lore, and that is Renfield from the Dracula movies.
Oh, yeah, of course.
I mean, if ever there was a queer-coded character from the word go, it has got to be Renfield, right?
Girl, boy sub.
Well, I might be actually, for that, hon.
He might even be considered a slave because he's goes, yes, master.
Master.
Yes, exactly.
And I think Rick is blushing, everybody.
His blood it's pressure not, is just up, not, honey. That's it.
It's not blushing. That's not what it is. But anyway.
It's the sugars.
Yes, exactly. But Field, actually, I think in every portrayal except one, has always been portrayed as queer-coded, but there was one movie in 1985 in which Renfield was actually gay, and that is Once Bitten, and Lauren Hutton played Dracula, or the female version of Dracula, and there was her version of Renfield was Sebastian, and go ahead.
Can we call her Draculauren?
Oh, cute.
I can.
That was a spooktacular joke.
Lord God. Anyway.
Go ahead, Sebastian.
Are you still on your first thing on the list, Rick?
Yeah, I'm not going to go down the whole. I've got a list, but I'm not going to go down the whole list. Not yet, anyway. The night is young. But anyway, that Sebastian is the only one to date, the only Renfield, if you will, to date that was ever portrayed as queer. And I don't think in 1985 they ever actually called him gay. It was just very obvious from his mannerisms and his actions.
So does that mean that he was the butt of the joke because it was 1985 and he was gay?
No, I think that they were trying to do something positive, but it was 1985. So he was queer coded for sure, but definitely not in the ways of like 1940 and 1930. And things.
Got
like
it. I mean, Peter McNichol in Dracula Dead and Loving It, Jacob. Mm-hmm. Very queer coded.
Yeah.
It's funny that you bring up like the queer coding. Like, I think we can go back to like the James Whale films, you know, Bride of Frankenstein. And I mean, he was an out director and
they're on my list.
Did you ever see, what is the movie with Brendan Fraser and Ian McKellen? And it's about the making.
Oh, Gods and Monsters.
Gods and Monsters. And Ian McKellen says he's on the set of Bride of Frankenstein, and you know, Elsa Lanchester is there on the slab, and he's got his assistant. And before they start filming, he's like, "So, what's going on here? Are people supposed to assume that we did her hair, and we made her dress? What a couple of poofs we are!"
Sir Ian never misses. No. Never misses.
No. Never. 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 Never.
No.
I love it.
I do think that vampires, though, I think vampires are inherently queer.
To me, without a doubt.
Yeah. I think vampires
are
at least for me, not non-binary. I was going to say, for me, they don't belong to, in my opinion, they don't belong in one sex or the other. They kind of move in between them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's a good way to put it.
I would probably have thought they were a little more bisexual. In the fact that they
and bisexual, honey, all the sexes.
I think maybe that's better, George. That I feel like they were inhabiting everyone. Mm-hmm. They were just like, oh, it's all a party. Let's go to the party.
I mean, you can't talk about queer vampires without bringing up Anne Rice. You just can't do it. That woman put queer sex in vampirism. And like, I don't know that she was the first, I mean, but she was definitely the one who said, this is what is happening.
She did it the loudest.
Yeah. She
might not have been the first, but she was the loudest.
With no coding. There was no coding.
Mm-hmm. No,
you know,
no.
You read Interview with the Vampire.
Very direct.
Of course, you read Interview with the Vampire, and it is these two men who are very much in love with each other, and they spend centuries together. And over time, that marriage starts to fall apart. And what do they do to fix it? They get a child. They get a little girl. That's going to fix that marriage. And it does for a while until she grows up and hates them both.
Well, but how does that just simply mirror real life, though? Yep. How many people have we known in life that said, well, you know, the marriage is on the rocks, so why don't we have another child? I mean, I think Anne Rice definitely had her finger on the pulse. She was giving it the realness that it deserved.
Oh, she had her finger on something, honey.
Well,
and of course, you know, the Tom Cruise, Brad Pitt version. We loved it when it came out. It was what we had. And
you know, sometimes you Tom get Cruise, the crumbs.
It was the best we could get at the time.
And Tom Cruise is kind of phenomenal in it. And I am not a huge Tom Cruise fan, but he is acting his ass off in that movie.
There are a couple of movies in his pantheon, I guess, if you will, that I am a big fan of. Interview with the Vampire is one, and Magnolia is another one. He blew me away in Magnolia because it was so different from what I expected from him. And there was that moment in Magnolia. I'm sorry, I'm getting off subject.
Yeah,
you are. There's that moment in Magnolia where he has by his, I think it's his father's bedside, and you see a side of Tom Cruise that you haven't seen in any other movie. It was beautiful. And there was a lot of those same elements in Interview with the Vampire.
He was in it to win it in Vampire. Not so much Brad Pitt. He checked his soul at the door and just went through the motions. He's like, I look good. What else do I have to do?
You know what? I can pick his soul up, pick his panties up. I don't give a shit. I'll take anything. He can just sit there and slobber on himself. I'm going to be like, Brad Pitt. Yeah, that's my boy right there.
Mm-hmm. I agree with Dan on this. I would probably do anything in the world Brad Pitt asked me to do. I don't care what it is. I would just do it. No question. So
he has made... Go ahead,
Joe. No. So before we leave this subject, it is really important to shout out that my boys and I are the same age. Brad, Tom, and I are all 60 this year. Hello!
Oh.
Shut up, Jake. Mm. Okay. Mm. What?
Who's the best?
Well, we're all on the same page.
Well, you're my favorite of the three, Dan.
Yeah.
Thank you. All right. You climbing back, Jake. You need to keep climbing, honey. You ain't to the top yet.
Honey, she's on the rough side of the mountain.
Uh-huh. Ooh, honey. And sliding down in espadrilles. It ain't a happening.
Oh, not the espadrilles. All right. Jake, what you got? Because I know Danny apparently has a big surprise for us, so I'm going to save him for last.
Oh, does she?
Well, you know, I kind of was thinking of it on I didn't come 100% prepared, but then I was thinking, what kind of who's queer and would be fun to talk about? And no, the character is not actually queer. Like, they're not portrayed as that, as such. But Ursula, the sea witch, is most definitely a big, like drag queen.
Honey, she is a gay icon.
Exactly.
Yes, yes, I love Ursula.
Exactly. And it's like that divine-esque.
Yes.
And I think she falls into that queer-coded characterization that we were talking about, 1,000%.
I mean,
even though she may not outwardly be, well, I don't know, in the last Little Mermaid movie, was she? I don't know. I haven't seen it yet. The one with Hallie
Bailey. Melissa McCarthy is getting close. Is Melissa even married?
The fact is very real. It's very documented that those animators based Ursula's look off of Divine. They want her to look like Divine. So kudos to that.
Yeah. Yes, and I will tell you, the later Broadway shows that have Faith Prince as Ursula, oh my God, it's so amazing. Faith can do no wrong in my book.
She's living out
I think Dan just inked himself.
I will tell you, Ursula is one of those characters that has been my favorite since I saw that stupid little whatever, what was that mermaid thingy, Mandu Bob, the Little Mermaid. I know what it is, the Little Mermaid.
What she's from.
I know that. I actually do know that. But I just thought that Ursula gave us all the realness of everything in that movie. The movie has so many great points, but I thought Ursula was my favorite by far 100 times over.
I mean, she is clearly queer. She threw on a wig and she went and stole a bitch's man.
Well,
and wrote a song about it. So
and wrote a song.
Exactly.
In full
so text. Dan, was Ursula your surprise, or do you want to tell us? He wouldn't tell me earlier today.
No, it's not Ursula, but I don't know. George, did you have your go?
I have so many things to say about queer monsters.
All right.
I think witches are my favorite. Witches are super queer to me. I love a witch.
Endora. Oh, honey. What's his name from True Blood? Lafayette's boyfriend. Woo, yeah. Lord, that child. Mm-mm-mm.
What's his name, Jake?
I can't remember what his name is.
George, do you know?
I'd have to look it up. He was also Hilda's ex-baby daddy on
Sabrina?
On Ugly Betty.
Ugly Betty. Ooh.
But then you bring up Sabrina, like that show. Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
Right.
Like, the advent, yeah. The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. Ooh, that was so good.
And I mean, I thought the two aunts on the original Sabrina, I'm like, they were a little close.
Oh, you need to see the new one.
Oh, so his name was Jesus Velasquez, and Velasquez, and he was a Bruja.
Bruja.
Yes. Do you know what Bruja is?
Witch.
I just said it, bitch. I know what it is.
Oh, honey, you just read it off IMDb. Whatever.
Rick, how are you not bringing up the hotness that is the
Uncle Arthur?
Lucifer.
Sorry.
Also on my list.
All right. Sorry, George. I had to do that. Yeah, so what was the hotness of what? Or of who?
What's the actor's name? Because I don't know.
I don't know. I'd have to look it up.
Fellow.
Lucifer. Oh. Yeah.
Lucifer.
Ooh, honey.
Yes.
That's the thing. Well, ooh.
I guess you
Tom Ellis. His name is Tom Ellis.
Oh, I know.
And ooh,
Tom Ellis. From Instagram. Right?
And Kevin Alejandro, who played Jesus in True Blood, is also in there.
Yeah, he is there.
I will tell you, now that you mentioned Lucifer, honey, that Lucifer business on television.
Yeah.
I have to go back and watch True Blood now. Was it season 2 or season 3? I think it was season 3. Season 3 was the season of the witch. I have to go back and watch True Blood.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, Lord.
Honey, Charlaine Harris brings us all the good stuff. Mm-hmm. All the good stuff. There's another author, though, that we were talking about, Anne Rice, earlier. Mm-hmm. Charlaine Harris is not afraid of giving us realness. And I think that that's important, because I think a lot of authors see that life is not just mundane and black and white. They're like, there's all colors in the rainbow. Let's hit them all and yeah. let's use them all. And I do appreciate that.
Did anything
Charlene
actually
does that with a lot of her with a lot of her books, not did just she the True Blood series, but in all of her books, she's got not queer coded characters. They're actually queer characters
living
in the world and being a major part of the story and not relegated to the sidelines.
All right, so I have a question because I tried to read the first Sookie Stackhouse, and I want to say Cookie Suckwell so bad. I tried to read the first novel and I just couldn't do it. What I do know though is in the very first novel, Charlene Harris kills off Lafayette very early on.
Yes.
So I'm assuming you never get Lafayette's boyfriend, the witch. You never get to these stories because she's killed the character. So how queer are the stories? We all know how queer the HBO show is, but how queer are the actual books?
I've read two.
Back to you. Oh, sorry, Rick.
I was gonna say I've read two of the Sookie Stackhouse. What'd you call it? Cookie Newbern.
Cookie Suckwell.
I've read two of the Sookie Stackhouse novels. The queer characters come in and out of Sookie's life. Yes, she killed off Lafayette. She also did something very different with Sookie's brother that was nowhere near what they did in the television show. I think what Alan Ball did with those characters, he took it to a place that obviously it made an impact on all of us, right?
Sure.
True Blood is a series that made an impact on us. But she gave him the source material and then he just took it to the next level. But the way she interweaves gay characters, at least in the two stories that I've read, and I've got one more that I'm about to read, the way that she interweaves them, they play substantial roles in Sookie's life. They're not front and center like Sookie. They're not the hero of the story, but they're also not always relegated to the sidelines. I think that Lafayette's death in the novel was meant to affect Tara more than the story itself because of his relationship to Tara.
So, which makes me wonder, does Tara become a lesbian with Pam? Like, does that all happen in the books or is that just Alan Ball doing what Alan Ball does?
I'm not that far in it. I don't know yet, but I will let you know.
Jake, you read the books, yeah?
No, I never did.
Oh, okay. Your brother did.
Yeah, he did.
Why don't we call her? Get her on the phone. Get her. Somebody look up her number right now.
I mean, Charlene. She put it in the book. She put it in the book that she signed for me.
Oh.
It said "fuck off," but I'm sure it's coded. like I'm sure
if you dial that,
numbers,
yeah,
yeah,
867-309. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Totes agree.
Dan, what is your surprise? We're ready.
So let's talk about my favorite 6'5" man.
Well, to quote Mae West, forget about the 6 foot. Let's talk about the 5 inches.
Well, hello. I do wonder. Well, so it's funny because when we came to this topic about queer monsters, I thought, I'm not that big on monsters. And then I thought about Munsters.
Oh,
and I thought that 6'5" Fred Gwynn gave us the queerest monster/monster of my childhood. You know,
he was absolutely delightful.
He was. He did everything in this little small window because he really was 6'5" tall. And in Hollywood, that's taller than the Jolly Green Giant. I mean, we got Tom Cruise at 5'0" or whatever.
But
I mean,
he clearly towered a foot over everybody else. So he needed a different camera just for him.
Just for him.
Or a different setup, at least.
But he gave us, in my estimation, so I thought about it. So we had Herman Munster, who's married to Lily.
Yes.
So at the same time, I was watching reruns of Gomer Pyle. And truthfully, with my mom, I was safe. But with anyone else, I would never have watched Gomer Pyle because he represented, for me, different, queer-ish and different. Herman Munster was different, but acceptable. And I thought to myself, you know, I've watched a bunch of clips and stuff with Fred Gwynn out of Munster character and in Munster character. And I think to myself, this man created a character that was so fucking enjoyable for me as a child and still enjoyable as me as an adult.
I can almost see the direction that he was given for his character. It was like, we're going to have you play Frankenstein. And because this is a comedy, but it's based on horror, you have to make him funny. And that's what he did with it. Because I look at him in his role, in his various roles he's done, but particularly My Cousin Vinny, where he plays very straight-laced judge. Then I also look at his character in Pet Sematary, who I almost didn't recognize because he was this backwoods country neighbor.
Oh, was he the neighbor?
Yeah. He was the neighbor that got his ankle slashed.
Oh, yeah.
So creepy. And you look at that and you juxtapose that against what he did in The Munsters.
Sure.
And you see the versatility of this guy. It's astounding.
And
good choice.
Thank you. And I don't feel like Fred Gwynn is making fun of gay people. It's not that. What I look at when I see him, I think to myself, this is an actor who's brought a whole bunch of all of this to his role, and he is flamboyant and out of sync with the rest of the world. And I kept thinking to myself, that's how I felt as a child and sometimes as an adult, that I was flamboyant.
Sometimes? Still,
okay, most of the time, honey. But slightly out of sync with the rest of the world. And I was like, you know, Fred Gwynn for Queer Monster of the Year. I love it.
Well, but why queer? Am I missing something? Is Fred Gwynn
queer-coded? I think it's queer-coded.
I'm so not really sure what queer coded means. So
that means characters that means characters that portray as gay but never actually out.
Yes, so, I think that's where I would put it. I just think that Fred Gwynn's portrayal was queer like, and I think his flamboyancy in his movements and his being off, that's what appealed to me. As somebody, I actually always felt
maybe not
like,
off, maybe it's different.
Different, I think it's a good word. I always felt like I identified with Herman Munster where I didn't with Uncle Arthur. I mean, I do now with Uncle Arthur. I'm a snarky
bitch.
Uncle
Arthur was my absolute favorite, though.
Yeah, but I think as I said earlier, that Herman Munster was somebody I could feel like I was close to, where Gomer Pyle, I couldn't, because neither one of them played gay. They played something flamboyant.
Queer-coded characters.
I like flamboyant better, but okay.
Well, but Gomer Pyle was not queer-coded. Gomer Pyle was just an idiot.
All right. So I have another one.
I'm on my list.
This one actually was number one on my list, but I moved it down because, again, I don't think it qualifies as queer monster. And it's definitely not queer coded because this character lived out and proud. But I'm talking about Willow from Buffy.
Oh.
Willow from Buffy.
Witches. We already brought up witches. Witches are the best.
Right. Yes. So, well, who were you going to guess? I'm curious.
I thought you might be leaning into some of like the Hellraiser, the Clive Barker stuff.
Also on my list. Mm-hmm. I'm a horror fan and have been for a long time. And horror is, what I love about horror is that it serves as an allegory for life, right? And a lot of horror stories are about, how do we come out? How do we deal with being different? How do we deal with all of these, you know, it's an allegory for, you know, different things in life.
Of course.
And so that's why you can relate so much of the queer experience back to horror, because it's a way of dealing with
difference.
Right. Exactly. In a way that is graphic and yet also sort of preserves that sense of privacy if you feel the need to keep something to yourself. But I don't know if that's making sense. I'm getting too deep into it. But anyway.
Jake, did you bring up your monster?
Yeah, I did. Yes. Ursula.
Ursula, of course you did.
She's definitely a monster.
I have more.
Oh, Lord have mercy. George, did you have another one, hon?
I actually do have one more. Go ahead, George. You can do this. I have one more really great one, but go ahead.
Well, I just want, you know, I would just like to bring it back again to Anne Rice, just because, you know, Anne Rice once said that she always writes about monsters. She writes about monsters and not necessarily just vampires, but she writes about people who are different. And in right. that, she is including the queer community because they are seen as so outside of the norm that in their own way, and through the lens of society, it's a monstrous thing, especially at the time that she was saying this. And that she always finds that humanity so much more interesting than like your 9-to-5, you know, pre-law student at Tulane, you know?
And again, and that comes back to that allegory experience, right?
Right, which is why I've always loved her, that she finds the beauty in things. And especially when she was starting writing in the 70s and the early 70s, when she's finding the beauty in things that people did not talk about. And then she's taking this parable about vampirism and turning it into a queer love story. And I've always thought there's something so queer about vampires anyway, just because it's so much about the blood. And then along comes AIDS, and like there's so much that happened that I feel like that is all in there and tied in, and that is part of the legend, and that's part of the story. And maybe I'm reading way too much into it now, but it is what I think.
Yeah, no, I get it. So I know we're running up on time here, so I want to kind of end this with probably one of the most intricate characters I can think of when it comes to horror and queer monsters, and that is none other than Norman Bates.
Yeah.
There's so much. You take all the sequels, take any remake, any exploration that's been done after it, and look at just at the first movie. There's so much in that character, in the portrayal of Anthony Perkins' portrayal of this character. And why Alfred Hitchcock chose him to play this character is that he was both vulnerable and scary at the same time, because he was embracing this side of himself where he has this relationship with his mother. He has this like internalized sort of suppressed sexuality in a sense. He is fascinated by Marion Crane, but yet he can't bring that forward, and he's suppressing it and turning it inward, and then he's impersonating his mother, and all of these things that are happening in Psycho. It's truly one of the most amazing queer characters, because obviously the man is queer, and I think it's one of the most well done cases of a queer monster in cinematic history to date.
So, you know, along with Psycho, Anthony Perkins did a movie before that called Desire Among the Elms, and he's in love with Sophia Loren.
Oh my God, I thought you were going to say Among the Elves. I was like,
no, honey.
Is that like an OnlyFans?
Right. Desire Among the Elves. Yes, it is. But, you know, Tony played a lot of repressed characters who were monsters, who did a lot of crazy things. So I will say Desire Among the Elms is very hard to find, but find it. You will love it.
Well, that makes me think of, like, if we're talking about queer monsters, like real for, well, obviously that's not a real for real monster, but I mean, are we talking like serial killers? Are we talking like Jeffrey Dahmer?
Oh yeah, I was thinking that too.
Well, I think that's what we'll do for Halloween next year.
There we go. Dan's on to something.
Look, I mean, look, I think we've gone long enough.
I do think there's something in having a conversation around serial killers, but I don't think it applies to this. I think we're talking about fictional monsters.
Yes, fantastical, fictional, delightful. Yep.
I'm delightful, god damn it.
God damn it. I'm pleasant.
I'm pleasant.
Okay, well, I said I was delightful.
Just the other day, I saw Drum eating at the
Lord
picnic.
Help me. Yeah. Right. Why did I open Pandora's box? Help me, Jesus. This is
nobody move. My contact. Yeah.
Rick is my favorite queer monster.
There we go.
He's my favorite nightmare, just so we're all clear.
Well, all right. well.
On that note,
trick or treat, bitches.
Halloween, y'all. Right? Come on. And I'm not going to, that candy corn sucks.
Give me something sweet to eat.
Yeah, you need something sweet.
So this is the last episode of the season.
Aww.
So you know what that means. We'll see y'all next time. And happy Halloween. All right. Bye, y'all.
Bye.
Hey, y'all. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Queer Magnolias podcast. We all love you and the amazing support and feedback you have given us thus far. So much we need more. We would love to hear more brilliant brainstorms from you magnificent magnolias. So we highly encourage you to be included and find/follow us at Queer Magnolias on Twitter and at Queer Magnolias Podcast on Instagram and Facebook, if you haven't already. We would love to hear your comments and feedback, good or bad.
Nobody wants their bad comments. Fuck off.
And you can listen to us on Spotify, YouTube, Apple Podcast, wherever the hell you're listening to us right now, or wherever you might find your podcast. All right. Until next time, Blossoms.